Well, now the Napier-based lawyer with a passion for education and an unswerving belief in its capacity to make positive changes in society, Roimata Smail's 16-year career in human rights and public law has specialised in discrimination against Māori. Alongside the law, Roimata has created some wonderful interactive teaching aids, the latest of which help primary school-aged children, 5 to 12-year-olds, learn about Aotearoa's history and Te Tiriti o Waitangi, all done in her spare time to help teachers plug a huge gap in school resources. Previously, we've spoken to Roimata about her ukulele waiata. She came up with the idea with her to help her husband Sam, who's a primary school teacher, when he was looking for resources to get more te reo into his classroom. Well, earlier this year, the Minister for Education, Chris Hipkins, announced that New Zealand history will be compulsory in schools from next year. So that is only going to increase demand for resources. Roimata gave up part of a precious hour of her lunchtime at court recently to talk to me again, reacting first to the Minister's announcement on the history curriculum.
It's such great news. It's just through doing my work as a lawyer and learning so much stuff about New Zealand history, I realised how little I had the opportunity to learn at school. And so it's really great that it's going to be something that the next generation and my children who are about to start school are going to learn all the things that we didn't get the opportunity to learn. It's great news.
What you have been doing to date with resources, however, is really a reflection of what has been a dearth of material, both in the reo, but also resources generally suitable and applicable to and for Māori and for all of us. And is there a real dearth in the education system and in educational resources?
Yes, I think that there's a lot of, you know, really expert people on te reo and on the treaty and our history. But I think that the gap maybe that's missing is that sometimes we forget how, you know, teachers coming through didn't get to learn these things themselves. So, for example, with te reo, it's actually really hard to teach te reo to 30 children if you're a beginner yourself. And it's different to teaching maths because you learnt maths when you were growing up. So I think just sometimes that's the gap that's there. And because my husband's a teacher and he tried to get me to help, it only really sort of made the connection for me that there really was a gap for teachers who are beginners in te reo. And because we didn't learn about the treaty as well, there's a real gap there for teachers who want to teach these things, but they just don't have the knowledge themselves. So yeah, there has been, I think there still is quite a big gap, and we're trying to help plug it.
Well, please describe some of your new teaching resources. What do they look like and how do they work?
Yes, so we have a website called Waiako, and it was originally started for teaching te reo, and it was based around some waiata that we wrote and recorded actually at Radio New Zealand about 3 years ago. And it was started around those because we thought those waiata would be really easy for teachers. They could play the waiata to their class, and the class didn't need to know that the teacher was learning at the same time. So it was just an instant lesson. And we've actually developed that further to put cartoons around all of our waiata, so that we actually now have a cartoon character called Kitty, which is my son's name as well, who leads the lesson around the waiata for the teacher. So it really makes it even easier for the teacher to just press play as a beginner and just join their students as a beginner. And what we've recently added this year, realising that this was coming up, that teachers were going to have to teach about New Zealand history and the treaty, and because I have background in that with my work as a lawyer, we've done the same thing and started to add cartoons that teach a lesson for a class about the treaty. And they're really simple, they're tailored for, even could be done with 5-year-old children, which there really aren't any resources for, and we just wanted to make it, like everything else on the website, super, super easy for teachers and that they could learn at the same time.
So these are animated modules, which is, again, always interesting and attractive and alluring to younger students, to all students, actually, but to younger students in particular. What's the breadth of subject matter? Are you continuing to add as you go along?
Yes. So when we started with the reo, we started with, I think, 12 waiata, so 12 different modules. And then we've extended it to over 20, I think we're at about 22 or something for te reo. But we put multiple cartoon lessons around the waiata, so we've got over 100 different ready-to-go te reo lessons. And we've just this year, just before Waitangi, released the first three of our modules, which each have multiple videos too, on the treaty. So we are getting started on that, and I'm actually really excited. We're going to add more and more. We just really want to support teachers.
So by modules, they are off the shelf, ready to go for a teacher to slot into their curriculum planning.
Oh, totally. And we have... I'm a lawyer, so we're kind of paper nerds, and so we even helped with draft planning documents for the teachers to use, because I read the curriculum. That's what lawyers are like. It's a bit tragic, but I read the Te Reo Māori curriculum and summarised it into planning documents, so they even have that ready to get started.
It is off the shelf. It is ready to go. They not even have to write their lesson plans. And how does this work? I see some of your content is accessible for free, but this is time and effort. How does it work? Can schools subscribe? Can individual teachers subscribe? What's the system?
Yes, so we have a few things that are free, but we have subscribers all over the country. So we have teachers who just sign up for a yearly subscription or a monthly subscription. But what we really like is for their schools to support them. So we actually have quite a few schools in all over the country where the school has signed up so that all of their teachers can get access. And then obviously it's a lot cheaper for the school to do that as well. And that's what we really like, because it's nice for that not to be the responsibility of the individual teacher. And it's more fun if all of the classes are doing it and the teachers and students can support each other.
It's also hours and hours of research in your own intellectual property that you are putting out there. Is it interactive in nature? Because this is the other thing. There's the subject matter. Then there's the ridiculous word that's always used is the pedagogy, right? There's the principles of good teaching. And have you brought those to bear in the way you've designed the modules as well? Are they quite interactive?
Yes, my husband was quite strict with me about what things would be boring for the children, and he said it had to be interactive. So while their videos, the te reo videos obviously have the waiata, and the children and the teacher need to sing that, so that's interactive. But we also, it's just part of the way that we've done all of our videos, is that we have spots where we prompt the children to practice together or to have a bit of a discussion. And now with the treaty sessions, we've kind of developed that even further to make it even more interactive. So it just still prompts them to have a little bit of a chat to see if they know the answer to something. But we also, for example, I'll give you an example. For the lesson about discovery of New Zealand, we talk about how the first people in New Zealand came here on waka, and the prompt is for the children to build a waka. So it becomes it has the information, but then it's something really fun for the children to do, and the teacher can do it however they like. And it's a really good way to engage with the information.
What consideration have you given also to language? And I guess this is particularly with the treaty module. This comes down to how you explain not only complex history, but complex, legal concepts to younger students. And what sort of wording do you use to begin to talk about the concepts?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I get feedback from my husband, and usually he takes it to his school and tests it out on the children as well to make sure that it's easy enough to make sense. But I mean, I think that the children can understand, if you break it down, for example, what the treaty is, they can understand that the way we describe it is the treaty is a piece of paper and it has promises written on it, and then people sign it to say they're going to keep the promises. So that's actually quite simple for the children to understand. They know what promises are, even if they're little. And then you can start to talk about what were those promises and what happened. And that way you can also do it over multiple lessons. I think that's kind of one of the things about Waiako too, I think, which is quite successful, is you actually don't have to teach the children everything about New Zealand history in one afternoon. You've got 6 years. You can chip away, you've got 6 years because we're aiming for primary school kids. You can do a little bit at a time, and then over time it builds up a picture for them.
What have teachers told you about the gap between what they need and what they've got? I know one teacher told you enough to get you going and writing it, being your husband. But what other feedback have you had about the gap between the needs they have for resources and what they have?
They sort of don't express it like that. They kind of, because they might think that, you know, it might look like there are resources out there, because there's certainly places where you can read about the treaty, and there's certainly places where you can find something written resources about Te Reo Māori. And that's just what we're all used to. I think that's what they're used to. The reaction that we get is shock when people see what the videos are and they realise, oh my gosh, this is something that I can just press play and play it for my class, and I can learn along with them. So I don't think they even envisaged that there was a gap. It's just more that they're sort of really pleasantly surprised when they see what it is.
What is the importance at primary school age, which is where you're working currently anyway, for this kind of knowledge and discussion and awareness of our country's history and of Te Reo Māori? It sounds a very simple question at one level, but this is your lived experience. And to people who still question whether it's a cramped curriculum and this is not the place for it, and, you know, there are other ways people can learn over time. From your lived experience, why is it important to be in the heart of the education system?
I mean, I could say a lot of things. First of all, I'd say the kids love it. So that's sort of one reason. They just love learning about Te Reo Māori, for example, because that's what we've been doing first of all. They feel like it's theirs, and it makes them feel really good. So I sort of think that that's reason enough. I mean, my husband, he told me about how some children in his class, I think they were talking about which languages they could speak. They had to write down which languages they could speak. And quite a few of them put down, just from learning, you know, some really basic stuff from Waiako, that they could speak Te Reo Māori, and they felt really proud of that. So I acknowledge that it's really, really, that teachers are very busy. So I see that with my husband, and my mum's just retired as a teacher too. So that's why we wanted to make it really easy. All our videos are between 30 seconds and I think about 5 or 6 minutes long, because we know that there's a lot to put in there. So the teachers need support to fit it into, yeah, really, really crammed timetable. But the kids love it, and I just sort of think it's their right as New Zealanders to learn it. Those would be the two main things, I think.
Roimata Smail is our guest. We are talking about the resources she's been making and is continuing to make, school resources for teachers to use off the shelf in Te Reo Māori and now in Te Tiriti, in the Treaty of Waitangi. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. There are a number of ways you could have answered it, Roimata, and I wonder if I could lead you towards another one, which is your legal professional career, which has been so involved with treaty issues in the tribunal and elsewhere. And could you speak, from what you've learned over the course of this career, the cases that you've taken on? I'll give you one example. I know you've been involved in a case involving institutional bias in the police force. If we are going to tackle and broadly understand as a community some of the issues we're grappling with, is a good starting point to educate our children, our coming citizens from a young age, to educate them in the realities of our history, as well as the fact they love it, as well as the fact it's theirs. Are there good reasons from your experience for this to happen?
You definitely. I mean, we see in the cases that we're doing about government departments discriminating against Māori, which I'm involved in a number of cases about, that it's just the same things repeating over and over again. It's what we see is, it's hard to believe in modern New Zealand, but actually what we're seeing in those cases is just repeating a modern version of things that happened 100 years ago. And no one, there's no sort of link between the two. There's no understanding that we're just doing the same things over and over. And we don't know, you know, and I think that the fact that we don't know our history, which I'm not saying is, you know, it's not the fault of individuals. Me, like others, we didn't get the opportunity to learn it. That's really contributing to us having all these cases about discrimination against Māori still in 2021.
These are a number of departments. I've mentioned the police, I think, Oranga Tamariki, Corrections, ACC. These are all the institutions where you are doing work.
Yes. And a new claim against the Ministry of Social Development as well.
What is the common thread through these claims?
I think that the common thread is that New Zealand's history, so especially the breaking of the promises in the treaty that Māori would continue to hold on to their land. Before we had the treaty, New Zealand was owned by Māori, and the treaty said, Māori, you can continue to hold on to all of your land. That it wasn't affected by the treaty. All it said was that if Māori wanted to sell it, they'd promise that they'd only sell it to the Queen, right? So those promises were broken, and Māori were separated through Crown processes from 95% of their land. So the source of their wealth, it could have been the source of their wealth, and also of just their way of living. It totally disrupted society as people had to move around to survive. And that has played out, is playing out today still in the problems that Māori are facing. You know, there are still people who are recovering from being impoverished through that process, but because no one is taught that happened, no one, people aren't really taught that happened, it's really easy to blame individuals for where they find themselves today. And that's what we see over and over in our cases.
When one thinks of what's happening in institutions at the moment and the scrutiny of institutions, Oranga Tamariki is a prime example. It is also a case that the partnership envisaged, and certainly that governments have agreed to in principle in contemporary times, needs to be a real thing. And it's not just a policy on paper. Is that another common thread, that many institutions, big institutions that affect people's lives, like Oranga Tamariki, the Ministry of Social Development, Corrections, right, where we have a grossly disproportionate percentage of our prison populations who are Māori, that they've got the policy of partnership, but it doesn't flow through to day-to-day practice in every way? Would that be another thread you see?
Oh, totally. I mean, you can be good at writing a document that talks about the treaty, but if all of the people who are implementing that document are part of the society where we didn't grow up understanding what the treaty meant and the ways in which the promises of the treaty were broken, then that people, New Zealanders, aren't equipped to actually act on the nice words of the policy. So the link to education is, you'd hope in 20 years, 30 years, would be in a totally different position where people would actually understand what those policies mean and how it should guide behaviour.
How do you speak to the concerns many people have that this amounts to indoctrination? That'll be one perspective, or it'll have a particular bias, this education. How do you respond to what you envisage the result of these things now being front and centre of young people's, you know, subject discussions at school, what difference it will make, and whether it's indoctrination or what you envisage it to be?
I would say I don't see learning facts as indoctrination. Unfortunately, in the past, we haven't, in our education system, had access to all of those facts. And I'll give you an example of why I call them facts. So we have actually now quite a big body of treaty settlement laws. So every time there's a treaty settlement, it has to be passed through Parliament, passed by our democratically elected members of Parliament. And the treaty settlement laws include an historical account. So that is an agreed set of facts about every interaction between that group and the Crown. So that has been agreed by the Māori group, and it has been agreed by the Crown. That is a really good source of facts about things that have happened in New Zealand. So I don't see that having access to facts is indoctrination. And I think back to what I learnt at school. We were really indoctrinated because I learned that Captain Cook discovered New Zealand, when the facts are that there were quite a few people here before Captain Cook ever came. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Why did you choose the law?
I must have been drawn to it. I at school, I had a teacher who told me that I should be a lawyer, that I should go to law school. Thanks, Mrs. Norrie. And I didn't know anything about it. We don't have lawyers in our family. And I did the law degree, and I was adamant that I wasn't going to become a lawyer. But then when I started, I thought, oh, well, I better give it a go. So I found a job, and I just found it was really well suited to me. It's been a really amazing opportunity to work in this area with the people that I have as clients, and to get to see parts of New Zealand and to learn things that I just had no idea about. It's been amazing.
Who've been the biggest influences on the path that you've taken in the law?
Probably a mixture of my clients, because they've taught me to see things in a different way. My own background is from growing up in the North Shore of Auckland. So I sort of had very, very much grew up in a Pākehā world, except for when I was with my family or if we went home to the pā or whatever. So my clients, and then I was lucky to have some really good lawyers that I worked with. So I worked with Justice Powell and Associate Justice Andrew on some of these cases, and learnt a lot from them.
The work that you've done with Lady Te Reiti Moxon, lawyer for all her historic claims, has this been an important partnership?
Definitely. Te Reiti, I've been working with Te Reiti. Yeah, she's definitely one of the ones that comes to mind when I say my clients. I've been working with Te Reiti for nearly my whole career. Initially, as a baby lawyer, helping on her treaty settlement negotiations for her iwi, Ngāti Pāhuera. And then more recently, she's been very good in trusting us with her claims. She's about discrimination against Māori. She has a Māori health centre, and she's really passionate about the people who are the clients and members there, and she's prepared to do whatever she can and to help them, and we've been very lucky that she's let us come along for the ride.
There are some really interesting cases. I mentioned the police case. One I know you've been involved with was a gentleman who wanted to become a doctor in his 50s and had, I think, a conviction as a barrier. And the case became about how police use their discretion. And again, the institutional bias is there in the facts. It's there in the data when it comes to arrest rates and so forth. And the police themselves acknowledge this. Police commissioner has acknowledged it just as recently as our last interview with him. So this is interesting, isn't it? How the law can be brought to bear in a specific case to try and right wrongs. What was the thrust of that case, that police discretion was used or is used in a biased manner and that that can affect someone right throughout life? Is that the gist of it?
Yes, yes, definitely. And really that case, so that's Tim, and he is still at medical school. He's doing really well. But, you know, he's had huge obstacles to overcome. And you can see through his life story how linked it is, that the use of discretion to what's impacted on his life. So it all goes together, because it's like what you were asking me before about policies. Their policies are implemented by people, by human beings, and discretion is the same thing. It's exercised by human beings. And if, as New Zealanders, we don't know the history of our country, if we don't know why Māori are so come out worse on statistics, you know, for socioeconomic statistics, if we don't understand how that's linked to breaches of the treaty and the loss of 95% of their lands, that impacts how we're going to exercise our discretion. And again, it's sort of not necessarily the fault of every individual, because they don't know that they don't know what they don't know. So that's why I sort of, we do the law work, but it does get me excited about the potential for education to achieve some of the things that we're trying to achieve through cases.
And then we go all the way to the big systemic issues, the Waitangi Tribunal's Health Services and Outcomes Inquiry, which led to the Hauora report in 2019, big changes to the healthcare system, again to look at inequity and to be able to identify and recognise the factors at play. Another one that I'm really interested in goes all the way back to the Foreshore and Seabed Act, now repealed. But did you work, I think, on one of the few cases to be brought under that act when it was in place?
Yes, I was one of the lawyers on the only hearing ever held under the Foreshore and Seabed Act, and that was a customary rights order application by Ngāti Pahawera, which was held at their marae in Mōhaka, which is on between Wairoa and Napier in 2008.
It was such a complex, looking at it legally, such a complex situation, and yet equally so simple, you know? Common law rights, not even statutory law passed by the Parliament of New Zealand, common law rights shared with jurisdictions, similar jurisdictions around the world. And it brought such change. Do you believe that act, the resistance to it, and the subsequent repeal was a watershed moment in many ways?
Well, I'm currently acting for Ngāti Pahawera in the High Court, as their application was transferred to the High Court under the new Takutai Moana Act. And yes, that Act replaced the Foreshore and Seabed Act. And there's things that are better about it, but we'll have to wait and see in terms of what is the outcome of this hearing to see if it really goes far enough in terms of recognising, you know, again, the history of New Zealand, that there are original Māori owners in this country, and we'll have to see whether it is going to go far enough to recognise that reality.
That is Roimata Smail, lawyer, and I think we can call her an educator. We were beginning the interview talking about these resources she's been producing for some time now the new Waiako resources. They're pretty much off the shelf and available for teachers in schools. You can get a taste of what she's produced by pushing the link on our webpage, 9 to Noon webpage. A very, very busy lady.